We're focusing on the low-wage workforce and how to address persistent turnover. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Frontline workers are often part-time, maybe seasonal, not in it for a tenure of packing boxes or delivering food, dipping cones, or washing dishes. A Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis survey of frontline workers late last year found 58% were looking for work with better pay. But the survey also found that work-life balance and job training in particular were really important. Have you ever felt trapped in a low-paying job? How should employers invest in frontline workers? And what does invest mean, by the way? 800-642-1234. Manjari Raman is director and senior researcher of the Managing the Future of Work Project at Harvard Business School, co-authored a recent report called Building from the Bottom Up. Manjari, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Good to be back here.
Good morning. So set the scene for us. How hard is it to keep the lowest paid workers on payroll right now?
You know, very respectfully, Kate, when you started the segment talking about how workers are all looking to get a better job and they're looking for opportunities outside their company, we surveyed more than 1,000 workers in low-wage positions across the country. And the signal we got from that survey was actually quite different. What we found was that many people are trapped in their low-wage positions and have actually stayed with the same employer in the same low-wage position for as long as 10 years or even more. So then we asked the question, why would you stay in a low-wage position? And one of the number one reasons people choose a particular job or a particular employer is how convenient is that employer to get to? Mm-hmm. What are my transportation needs? How conveniently is that job located? Once workers find a job that is convenient to get to, they signal very strongly, I want to stay. And so it's up to employers to value that and show them, here are the ways in which you can stay in the company, do more in the company, learn to move up to supervisor positions, even managerial positions. Here's the training you need. But unfortunately, we also surveyed 1,000 employers, and we found most employers are not doing any of this.
Hmm. Your study defines a low-wage worker as someone earning below $39,000 a year. Are certain industries worse than others with how they treat the lowest paid workers?
And just to put in context, the $39,000, that might look like a lot in a smaller town or a rural area across America. But if you're thinking about urban areas, that is, you know, it's $39,000 for a household of three. But keeping that in mind, these workers are actually quite concentrated in a few industries. Accommodation, food services, retail, and believe it or not, healthcare. Many EMTs earn below this amount. And it is shocking that these are the industries that tend to have many jobs, and many of those jobs tend to be low-wage jobs. So it's really challenging for companies who are in these industries because they are constantly seeing a churn. People are not happy in these positions. The jobs are difficult. You're standing physically on your feet. You're doing a lot of physical labor. There's a lot of stress. Very often you're facing the customer. And workers are just not being compensated enough for doing what they're doing.
Talking with Manjari Raman, director of the Managing the Future of Work Project at Harvard Business School, co-authored this report called Building from the Bottom Up. You can join in with your thoughts on what it means to invest in low-wage workers. 800-642-1234. Susan is with us from Westfield. Susan, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What is on your mind?
You know, I think definitely low-wage workers do deserve a lot more respect and work very hard. My experience has been, most maddening thing for me is lack of training. I have found that businesses lose more people. I've been more frustrated, and so many people I know just get so frustrated when you don't get trained properly. Training seems to consist of, look, here's how I do it, really, really quickly, and then walk away, and they come back 2 hours later wondering why you're still staring at the computer, wondering what your next step is. And it's very demoralizing when you don't get proper training.
Hmm. Susan, thank you for that. Manjari, what about training?
Susan is absolutely right. She's nailed it. What we found is that the top three things that employers are not doing is that there's no mentorship or supervisor feedback to workers. Secondly, workers are not told about the career pathways that exist for them in that company. And thirdly, they're not provided the learning and development and the training that they need to step up on those career pathways. So one of the questions we asked workers was, how many positions up can you see? And believe it or not, for a majority of these workers, they couldn't see beyond the next supervisor's position. Hmm. And that's ridiculous, right? Because all organizations have pathways, and you should be able to see three levels up and know that if I train and if I do this, I will get to the next level and my wages will be this at the next level. And you should be able to plan your career pathway. Unfortunately, that's just not the case. And the flip side of what Susan was saying is a real tragedy, because again and again in the survey, we found workers have a strong sense of agency. Hmm. They are not asking for a handout. They're just saying, please just tell me, what do I need to do? I will invest the time. I will put in the time to do the training, but just at least tell me, what is the training I need? And employers are not even providing that much.
We had a restaurant owner on our show recently, and I made a mental note to ask you about it. We were talking about teenagers filling low-wage jobs at her restaurant and how she really felt no remorse about their minimum wage. She said they're learning how to mop correctly, learning how to interact with customers, learning how to bus and set tables the right way, learning schedules. And because they are learning on the job, it's okay to pay them that minimum. And I wonder if that mindset creeps into attitudes about low-wage workers, that there is always this element of skill building, and therefore, because you're not totally proficient in every aspect of the work, it's okay to pay you less and perhaps, you know, take what you can just to get that labor. What are your thoughts there?
Kate, this is the fallacy with which we console ourselves, that people in low-wage positions are in entry-level positions and they are teenagers. Unfortunately, in our survey, we talked to workers. They were all over the age of 21. Mm. They were not young. Many of them were in their 40s and 50s and had been in low-wage positions their entire life. There is no... that was an old era where these were called positions where you could come in and learn how to mop and basic workforce skills. That era has gone. Now it's an era where people are stuck in low-wage positions. And unfortunately, when we say people, a large number of these workers in low-wage positions tend to be women and people of color. So it's a dual tragedy in that we have people who are caregivers, people who were, you know, previously incarcerated, people who don't have a four-year college degree, all kinds of people who have no other option but to stay in these positions. And you might ask, why do they stay in these positions? Because you know what? Not being in that position is a complete drop-off. Mm. It could mean homelessness. It could mean losing child custody. It could mean food insecurity. One of the most moving elements of the survey was we asked people, do you have the confidence to ask for a promotion? If you're not getting mentorship, do you go to your supervisor and ask for feedback? They don't. People are scared. Hmm. People are worried that if I ask for feedback and I get the wrong feedback, that you're not doing the job well enough, I have to leave. And then where do I go? So it's a truly poor situation. And on the flip side, employers are also paying the cost, because we found turnover in companies was more than 25% in these positions. So imagine, in many companies, it was going up to 50% and 75% a year. Hmm. Can you imagine your workforce constantly churning, wanting to hire?
Huge churn. So let's pause right here with Harvard Business School's Manjari Raman, leads the Managing the Future of Work project, out with an 83-page analysis of low-wage workers, how companies can better address this churn. What factors are most important to you in staying with a job? Does your company chew through its lowest paid employees? What happens to them? Do they leave or move up in the organization? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Manjari Raman here on the Ideas Network. New research out of Harvard Business School aims to help companies rethink how they view low-wage workers, who make up 44% of the American workforce. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the pandemic especially, we've seen an onslaught of retention bonuses, of signing bonuses, referral bonuses. But the study authors say incentives alone won't solve the retention problem. So what will? Is your company scraping by with barely enough workers to cover shifts and continually having to train up new people? What is that like? 800-642-1234. Harvard Business School's Manjari Raman directs the Managing the Future of Work project, co-authored the study, and she's with us for 9 more minutes. Let's go to Ted now in Eau Claire. Ted, hi. What is your perspective?
Well, my perspective is that, everybody seems to look at the issue of employers trying to retain employees. But one of the things that gets missed over and over again, and this includes when the government is looking at trying to increase wages and that type of thing, one of the biggest problems that I see is the benefits. For a person who's making $39,000 a year, for a lot of corporations that are multi-billion-dollar corporations, these people have $6,000 a year that they have to pay in premiums for their family, and then have $12,000 to $13,000 deductibles. So what that does is it forces those people to be on public aid for their insurance, because they can't afford to have that type of a premium in insurance.
They can't afford to have the health benefits that the company is providing. Manjari, what do you see there in terms of benefits that these low-wage workers receive?
I think the biggest benefit, one of the questions we asked, we even asked folks, would low-wage workers like things like ESOPs, stock options in companies. Actually, the biggest benefits that workers are looking for is investment in training.
Hmm.
People feel their skills eroding. People feel the skills gap. People understand that their ability to aspire to higher wages is linked to their ability to be more productive. This is not just about, let's raise wages. This is about, how do you connect the link between productivity and pay? And people can only be more productive when somebody is making sure that they are learning how to be more productive. When they are more productive, it actually helps the company that they are working for. So the math, which is right now a fight to the bottom, always looking at workers as a liability and a cost, actually needs to be inverted on its head, where workers need to be seen as assets. Once you recognize that, I think your numbers start looking very different.
I found it interesting, too, that you found employees, they want some guidance from their employer on what skills they should learn and where they should go to get those skills, that it might not be at the university or college down the street.
It could be at the university, at the college down the street, at a community college, or it could simply be a few hours a day in terms of customer service orientation, for example.
Mm.
So a lot of times the opportunity that companies are missing out on is not looking at their workforce through a wider lens and say, what are the open positions in our organization? And do we already have some of the skill sets that we require in the organization? And now can we move people across the organization with a little bit of training and a little bit of, you know, more learning and development, maybe even just a little bit of supervisor support, and get them into a position to do a better job? A simple example is people working in housekeeping. It's increasingly we are seeing those in the accommodation services trying to look within the housekeeping staff to say, how can we now move them up to something which is in the front office? And in fact, when we looked at data on how low-wage workers change jobs, we find that people are actually jumping from industries, from different positions in industries.
Yes, I found that really interesting. You know, people who progressed, shifted industries, that, you know, a change in employers perhaps correlated with moving forward?
Yes. And that's because in many low wage positions, increasingly because of automation, the nature of low wage positions is becoming more complicated. It's no longer just the dirtiest, the hardest position. It's also now a position where you're expected to problem solve, communicate, team communications, deal with the customer. Those very quickly become quite sophisticated skills, what we euphemistically call soft skills. So workers who show strong tendency to have these soft skills are actually pure gold as far as the organization is concerned, because those are the skills that they want in all the positions across the organization.
Manjari Raman with us, co-author of a report looking at how employers can boost their entry-level workers, the report called Building from the Bottom Up. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Manjari, you found a disconnect between people senior in the company who say, look, we offer mobility, we offer all of this menu of things that our workers can do, but there was this disconnect as you go down the food chain, if you will, down to the supervisor level, that all of this, all of these opportunities get diluted in some way. What is going on there?
You know, this was one of these big eye-opener moments in the data. We made a list of about 60, more than 60 actions, right from the time a person is hired till the time they leave the company, asking questions on, you know, does your company do this? Does your company do this? Does your company do this? You know, do you get mentorship? Do you get supervisor support? Do you get training? 65 questions. When we asked workers, they came back with a strong no, 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 none of these actions have happened to me. Then we went to employers and asked the same questions. Are you performing these actions for your workers? And senior leaders, those who are in the C-suite, tended to say yes, many of the times. Middle managers tended to say yes less because they were closer to the reality. And supervisors who work closest with low-wage workers had the same reaction as low-wage workers. No, in my company, we're not doing any of these actions. So the irony is that senior management in many companies believes we've got the policy, right? Of course it must be implemented. Actually, it's nobody's job to worry about the implementation. So despite having the policies, due to poor implementation, workers are not getting the mentorship they need. Workers are not told about the career pathways. Workers don't know about the learning and development opportunities that they have. As a result, there's a high churn and the company pays the price.
In our last moments together, we know employers are going to be facing this tight supply of workers for a long time. We know Wisconsin in particular is an aging population. So as you give one last piece of advice to firms in Wisconsin about this reality, what can they start implementing today? What should they not wait on?
The number one thing is to recognize workers are an asset. And a worker who is already, remember, this was a survey, this was all research about workers who are already working for their company for 3 years or more. These workers have already signaled, we like you, we want to work with you, we want to stay here. it's up to the employer to recognize that there is all this goodwill. They want to be trained. They want to stay here and find ways to create career pathways. And the second thing I'd say is employers are actually now starting to be innovative, not just in terms of here's a better benefit or there's a $1 more higher salary, but actually starting to see what are career pathways? What can I do in my company? And if I can't do it in my company, how can I partner with someone outside my company to create career pathways for my workers? And actually, when you do something like that, the local community gets strengthened. You know, where do companies find workers? They find them from the local community, right?
Manjari,
Manjari, it's good to tell them that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Manjari Raman, director of the Managing the Future of Work Project. We have a link to her report at wpr.org/mornings. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.